HD Smartcast. You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to the HD Brunch Podcast, the weekly companion to your printed copy of HD Brunch, where I, your host Karishma Kunzang from Team Brunch, give you a behind the scenes of what you'll be reading on Sunday. There'll be interviews with the biggest Bollywood celebrities talking about things that matter to them. You'll also get to know a little more about the columns by Veer Sanghvi and Seema Goswami from the columnists themselves. Why should you listen to it? Well, it's one of India's top Sunday magazines. It has the best editors, columnists and opinion leaders bringing you what's happening around town. Listen on for an additional dose of brunch. This series is available on hdsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform. Hey guys, how's it going? I remember when I was in my pre-teens and I ended up crushing on some guy in my neighborhood. As it turned out later, we found out that he was a house help, and though obviously we never spoke and I didn't even know his name, there were plenty of looks exchanged. And when my parents found out about these looks being exchanged, all hell broke loose. Because how dare I crush on a house help? I mean, I was completely unaware of the class difference that was carried out in my own household. And even though I'm much more aware of it today and try to, not practice it as much as I can in life, I still fail to understand the point of it, especially in the day and age of social media. So when I spoke to HD Brunch cover stars Adarsh Gaurav and Tilotama Shom, actors who've recently played roles of house helps in their releases, White Tiger and Is Love Enough Sir, they had a lot to say about their own eye-opening experiences besides talking about what they think about fame. Listen on for our chat. Hi Tilotama and Adarsh, congratulations on your HD Brunch cover and welcome to the HD Brunch podcast.
Based on the research that both of you did for your respective roles, what are your views on the state of domestic health in Indian societies in general? I mean, what is the big problem? I mean, I'm sure you did your little bits of research, whether it was online, whether it was talking to people. But what was the basis of it? Like, do you think it's just a tradition that, you know, we've been carrying on, or is there like the angle of the caste system?
When I was working at the stall, everything just like all these invisible boundaries that we have, they weren't invisible anymore for me, because like I started experiencing it firsthand, and it made me realize that, I don't know, maybe because I mean I've lived in India, so when you don't look a certain way or you don't dress a certain way, or, you know, I mean, let's just call it aesthetic, right? Like, if you don't fit a certain archetype, you just suddenly become invisible, and people just, you sort of become a part of this ocean of people, and like you're just insignificant. So I felt like I experienced that insignificance when I worked there, and when I used to roam the streets of Delhi, and I was working at this thela in Delhi, where I was cleaning plates and just keeping the place tidy, running small errands for.
It was incredible when I heard that. I was so happy. Yeah. I was so happy that you put yourself through that kind of.
Yeah, but you know, like, what really saddened me is that, like, I had the option to get out of it in 2 weeks, just like. Sort of get an experience of it and then come back to this, right? Like, I'm in a suit right now and I'm sitting in a comfortable studio with an air conditioning on, but like people don't have that choice, and like that really sort of hit me hard.
I don't want to hide my muck behind tradition, you know, so I think that's a real cop-out. Oh, it's, you know, I don't want to blame it on anything. I want to take responsibility for it. I am extremely class conscious. Clearly, I haven't looked at a man who is not of my class with a sense of desire. When I sit in an Ola or an Uber, I don't check out who the driver is. I'm on my phone. talking to people and engaging with people who are in my class. And the film, when I read the film, I realized that, you know, I'm absolutely guilty of the very thing that the film is critiquing. And no matter how nice you think you are and educated and liberal you are, you have kind of accepted the fact that things about my society, the society that I live in, without questioning it, and I'm very ashamed of it. And
it's not human nature. It's also upbringing, right? I mean, that's what I'm.
But I mean, I've questioned so many things about, you know, there's nature and there's nurture, right? Yeah, you nurture certain qualities. Exactly. I was not someone like, I don't know about you, Adarsh, but like I had a stammer growing up. I never thought I'd be an actor. So where did that come from? It's nurture, right? We nurture certain things that, you know, we want to see in ourselves. Mm-hmm. And when I read this film, I was like, I don't want to blame this on culture, tradition.
Yeah.
And ye hamara to nature hi hai. Ye to India hi hai. I don't want to hide behind this, yeah. You know, you can manicure your nails and... But agar nakhun ke niche gand hai, to hai na.
Exactly. Well, aap
kitna bhi nail polish laga ke dhako, par hai to hai na.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I don't think... I think it's like really soft apartheid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think we are so class biased. That we can't imagine intimacy between people when someone is such an intimate part of our lives. The people who work in our homes,
yeah.
It's a really intimate relationship. They're making your beds. Exactly. They're making food for you. Okay. They're coming into your bedroom. But we can't imagine a friendship or love or romance with them,
yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
Adarsh, your character at one point says, a servant is nothing without his master.
Yeah.
Right. So while it's true in the Indian context, do you think such equations should exist?
I mean, absolutely not. I don't think, while we live in a society that is mutually dependent on each other, but for your life to be tied up to somebody else's life at that level, is there's something really wrong about it, right? I mean, and it's the truth. It's the reality of the world we live in. I mean, just things like when I'm in an auto and I see somebody asking for money, it makes me angry because I'm like, this is not... I mean, of course, as a good person, it's my duty to help them out, but it's not. It's the duty of the government at large to make sure that these conditions don't exist. I want to help them, but why has it come to that state? Yeah, these things make me angry and they make me uncomfortable and not quite sure what the solution is.
When the pandemic hit us and, you know, building societies didn't allow your staff to come in, I really think for me the equation really changed. Who's the slave and who's the you know, how dependent we are on our survival, on people and the interconnectedness of life and how it's important to, you know, live in a way where there's dignity.
Exactly.
You know, that everyone has that basic dignity because you can't bloody function.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't run a house without the help of people, you know?
And
like we can't make a film, right? Without like a light person, the camera department.
And all these things where we work have so many rules and so many regulations and like, you know, you need to work between 9 to 9 or whatever, you know? But where are these rules that for the working class?
Yeah.
I mean, we... There is
where
no
are the
paid...
trade unions? Where is the health insurance? Where is the medical? You know, so this kind of parity that we are talking about, the equality that we are talking about, we have actually, this is systemic violence.
Yeah.
And we are totally perpetrating it.
For sure.
And I really feel like when the pandemic hit us, I really feel like this ugly truth became even more visible. When suddenly you realize that, oh, you really can't do without help, you know?
Yeah.
You are so pathetic. And you suddenly feel like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I'm quite useless. And, oh, these I must really respect the people who work and help me be alive and do the things that I like to do can't happen.
Yeah. Your character's ambition of making her own life count by giving an education to her sister.
Yeah.
Do you think that is... what is your opinion of it? Do you think that is an unfair amount of pressure?
In White Tiger or Sir, the idea of exploring class, you know, the class exploration comes with an education is like strictly tied into that, right? You educate yourself in order to escape the class that you were born into. for Ratna, if Choti studies, then she can, you know, in an English medium school, she can get out from being in the class that she was born to, which is being working in someone's house as a quote-unquote servant. It's a terrible word in the first place, you know. We are all serving something.
Yeah.
You know, so, some agenda, some boss, some idea,
sure.
You know. So, for Ratna, like for me, like I studied really, I come from a, you know, my father's an Air Force officer, and like the whole idea of education or studying more, I did a double master's. What was this whole desire to study so much? It was so that I could see more of the world. I could negotiate and engage with more of the world than my father could, you know, and it was that, it's that hunger, right, to escape what society thinks only you can only do this much. You can only see this much. This is only the sliver of the pie that you will get. You can't eat more than this.
Right.
You can't get more than that.
Right.
You know. So I feel like that is, it's a normal human aspiration to study and to learn so that you can grow more. You know, honestly, when I was researching for friendships and relationships between people who, you know, domestic staff and people who worked in their house, most of the hits, barring a few cinematic appearances over like last 40 years, the most of it was relegated to the world of pornography. Because hum to imagine hi nahi kar sakte na. And people who are from a class, you know, of the lower class of society, how can they have desires?
Yeah.
In so many interviews after, sir, like people are tiptoeing around saying, but you know, like a maid. We are so clumsy because we are so guilty.
Yeah.
We are so guilty that we don't even know how to talk properly. You know, so I feel like an exploration of the lives of those who have lesser than us, either we tend to romanticize it to the point of making it unreal. In my research, I really couldn't find much which was, I think we have a long way to go. I think it'll be reactionary.
Yeah.
We'll react to it first before a real revolution happens, where we can just frame a person without, in a film,
yeah,
and spend 15 minutes. If a man and a woman are sitting on a sofa, and for half an hour, you don't even know what work they do, wouldn't you just look at them as who they are?
Yeah. Have people gotten in touch with you guys saying that they have a new perspective or a new point of view when it comes to the lesser privileged, you know, like who are part of their lives? While, you know, do you think movies like this and documentaries or films like this will make a change?
I just feel that people have, even if it's for a temporary a period of time, because to bring a permanent change, you need to like keep witnessing or experiencing these kind of things. But even for a temporary span of time, I think people have become just more aware of what they're doing. They watch themselves more. They're more conscious. And I've had people tell me that they're scared. And that obviously comes from a place of like guilty conscience, right? You're obviously guilty of not treating people a certain way or how... So, yeah, I mean, I don't know about anything else, but even if this happens for a temporary period of time, no, I still feel like wo film ki jeet hai. It just places a mirror in front of you, and then it, you know, it, like you examine yourself and you're just like, yeah, what I've been doing is wrong, and at least opens up space for conversations, you know. I mean, it's something is better than like being silent about it. So at least talking about it, and then that staying in your subconscious and that affecting your behavior towards people. I mean, even if that happens, I think it's a small victory for something like this.
Actually, it's been really overwhelming with Sir, because a lot of people have messaged and shared about how they were in love with someone who worked in their house. They were packed away to, you know, because it was such a taboo. And the sense of guilt that they felt for running away, or for, you know, the person being fired and it being hushed up. So a lot of people have written to me about them being third generation, you know, of people who've escaped that drudgery, you know, and so it felt like it hit a chord, you know. I felt like it hit a chord where people felt uncomfortable But change, I think, is a, you have to really consistently battle your monsters. I don't think change is possible through a film. I think that would be too naive. I certainly can't say that I have changed. I can only say that I've become more aware of not being such a good person, that, you know, and I'm uncomfortable and things are in flux, and yeah, it's a beginning of a conversation.
I definitely feel that it raises questions, and I don't know, for some reason cinema that tries to preach, I'm not sure what I feel about it, but when cinema tries to question things that have been in existence for a long time, or just offers the storyteller's perspective into how he sees the world, is the kind of cinema that I like. And I'm really, really glad that both of us could be part of such films.
A lot of people have asked that, you know, what happens to Ratna and Ashwin after the film ends. Well, however you think it ends says a lot about you. If you think they can ever be together, it says a lot about you. And if you think they can't be together, it also says a lot about you.
Exactly.
So there is going to be no sequel. The sequel is in your heart and mind. Like, what kind of world you want to live in. That's the sequel, you know.
Was there any hesitation while considering the role? Or was there any advice that came your way from whoever? Anyone in the industry or outside? Aisa role mat karna, you know, you'll be a stereotype and you won't get the role of a hero or a typical heroine later on.
Yeah, I've never been a heroine anyway. And mujhe banna bhi nahi hai. So, I never got into this. I got into this, it was an act of defiance. I saw my first performance that blew me was Piyush Mishra's one-man show when I was in college. And whatever happened to Betty Lemon, it was a one-man show and he played some, I don't know how many characters. And I saw this man on stage and I realized that this is insane. That one person can have so much empathy and live so many lives. And that's when I wanted to be an actor. And for me, being an actor is just an act of defiance of everything I was told I can't be, you know. So it continues to be that. It continues to be an act of defiance. So I've never really asked anyone or never thought of, like, you know, what will the industry say or what will people say. You know, I have had, after Monsoon Wedding was my first film where I played a maid, where I played Alice, I kept on getting offers of people who were like, you know, that people couldn't imagine me in any other way other than a maid. And I've really made money out of playing people who are marginalized in society. And after a point, it gets annoying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not poor. I have a lot of privilege. So I'm not rich either. Mm-hmm. So why can't I play a rich person, a character who's rich? You know? So these stereotypes exist because I think people are comfortable with what they've seen and are afraid to reimagine someone, but my job is not to give in to that. You know, to not care about what people think about me. My job is, if it's a role that, you know, allows me to learn something more, push myself, do something which I haven't done, explore something that makes me uncomfortable and grow. And yeah, I've never had any kind of that kind of mentor or, you know, that kind of advice from the industry ki ye karo, ye karoge to tumhari career khatam ho jayegi. And in fact, if people said that, I would want to do it more. But thankfully, no one has really given such advice because I'm not in the race to be some heroine, no?
I feel I act for very selfish reasons. I'm not trying to bring in a revolution of any kind, or I don't think I'm evolved enough to even think that big right now at this stage of my life. Why I really act is because it gives me pure joy, and where it started from was because I loved to lie as a kid, and I would enjoy lying. Almost have this compulsive disorder to lie about the smallest of things that didn't require me to lie. Lie to my parents, my friends, and it gave me a certain kind of thrill to dupe people and to convince them about something that didn't exist, and to see how easily they used to get convinced if I believed in my lie. If I didn't believe in my lie, they wouldn't get convinced. But obviously, if I genuinely believed in it, they would. And like, one of the places where it started from was David Blaine, because I used to see David Blaine perform, and I, as a kid, interpreted it completely differently. I thought David Blaine had supernatural powers. And I told myself that I have supernatural powers, and did these really stupid things, and convinced my friends that, you know, that something beyond the ordinary exists. And I never grew up watching a lot of mainstream cinema or cinema in general. So the idea of being a hero or anything like that, it's never really affected me or influenced me in any way. I think my biggest trip is to just constantly keep growing and adding things to my repertoire.
What was the most difficult part about cracking the industry?
I don't know. It's a constant chase, right? And the day the chase gets over, then there's nothing left. I don't think I ever want to feel like I've cracked anything.
Okay.
Because everything is about that chase and that thrill, and if I don't have that, then I don't know what else is there.
It's kind of direction. What in today's day and age does fame mean to you? I mean, is it the long-lasting hero-worshipping one that we had like 10 years ago, or the one where you get 200,000 followers overnight?
It's really not important. I mean, neither have I hero-worshipped anyone, nor do I take Instagram or any social media very seriously.
Fame is the enemy of any artist, because suddenly it gives you access to more comfort and makes you more conscious in an unnecessary way.
Yeah.
So it dilutes your experience of life in a lot of ways, right?
Thank you so much for your time, guys.
Thank you.
I'm not someone who goes abroad and goes looking for Indian food. I'm more experimental within reason when it comes to local food. After all, isn't that a part of the complete experience? But every international artist I've spoken to raves about the Indian food you get in London. From British vocalist Anne-Marie to French DJ David Guetta. Very recently, actually. And our very own Sadak chef, Saranj Goela, has also launched his Goela butter chicken there. And that too during the lockdown. But let's not forget the pioneer, you know, who've taken Indian food abroad though. Like Chef Atul Kochar, whose journey HT Brunch columnist Veer Sanghvi talks about this week.
You know, Indian food has never been hotter globally than it is today. For instance, the whole of the United States of America was a bit of a wasteland when it came to Indian food. There are now significant Indian restaurants in nearly every American city. No, they don't get Michelin stars. No, they don't all get rave reviews. But they're there and they're catching on. It's different in England because there's always been curry houses which were not very good, frankly. But there were chefs who pioneered a different kind of cuisine, who made Indian food respectable, who made sure that the top restaurant lists always included Indian restaurants. This week, I profile a pioneering Indian chef. He's Atul Kochar, who used to work with the Oberoi's in India, went to England, started Tamarind, won a Michelin star, moved, opened Banaras, won another Michelin star, is now running a very successful Indian restaurant called Kanishka and will open another one. The interesting thing is that Atul's opening in Delhi, well, Delhi NCR anyway, he's opening a restaurant called Saga and trying to bring his food to Delhi to see if we like it. I assume Saga will succeed. I've tried the food. But even if it doesn't, I think it's time for us to honor our pioneers, to honor people who've taken Indian food abroad and made us proud.
When I was in Delhi, for me, what would mark the onset of spring was the 2 to 3 day jazz festival that used to happen at Nehru Park. You know, listening to music while just rolling around and, you know, digging in the greens. And though the festival season, you know, that particular festival started off pretty well initially, its quality went a tad south as it became a place where people would just, you know, get wasted. I still went for it though every year, finishing up with a plate of momos at Yashwant Place Complex right opposite it. Well, since that stance cancelled due to COVID, if I were in Delhi, I would have definitely gone for a picnic and made the most of the time I can walking around without wearing a sweater or drowning in your own pool of sweat. I especially love walchingdown Malcha Marg in Janakipuri. It's near my school, Carmel Convent, which was, and that area was always so lush and green around that time during spring. Well, since HT Brunch columnist Seema Goswami is in Delhi, here's her list of things to do before summer hits.
Every year, as the days get longer and warmer, I make a resolution to make the most of the short-lived Delhi spring. And short-lived it certainly is, dissolving into summer in the blink of an eye. I often say that living in Delhi means you have the heater on one week and you have the AC on the next. So if you're going to enjoy the nanosecond that spring lasts, you better have your to-do list ready and be quick about ticking off all the items. But there's a certain magic about the Delhi spring. For the few weeks it lasts, it makes up for the bitter indignities of winter and the harsh humiliations of summer that we have to live through. The trick is to make the most of it so that you store up enough memories for the rest of the year. So here, in no particular order, are just some of the things that you could try and accomplish. Visit your neighborhood park and feast your eyes on the spring blooms that are all around us this season. Better still, visit your local nursery and pick up a few pots of plants to brighten up your balcony, your terrace, or your garden. You can, of course, travel back in time and visit all the many monuments that are littered around Delhi. Best to do this before it gets too hot. Same thing you do with a picnic. This is probably the last week that you can actually head out with friends, lay out a carpet on the ground and enjoy some snacks. Soon it'll be too late to do that, and then you'll regret not making the most of spring.
'90s kids, you're in for a treat. Which '90s song remains a favorite for you even today? While you ponder that, maybe you can get some ideas from Ishan Nigam. He's a 26-year-old singer and YouTuber from UP who's now in Delhi. I came across him quite randomly when one of his cover videos popped up on my Insta feed. And his collection of 90s Bollywood songs sent me down memory lane. Ishan actually started singing when he was 10, and he's a Sangeet Praveen in Hindustani classical music. And with 4 originals out, his love for covers and 90s music is evident from his feed. And so we got him to play a cover of what was once one of my favorite songs, Do Dil Mil Rahe Hain, from the 1997 movie Pardes. Hope you enjoy it.
Hi, I am Ishan Nigam. And I'm going to sing a song called Do Dil Mil Rahe Hain from the movie Pardes, originally sung by Kumar Sanuji. Here it goes.
Aise bhole ban kar baithe jaise koi baat nahi sab kuch nazar aa raha hai din hai ye raat Do dil mil rahe hain
Have a great Sunday brunch.
The weekend is when you take a break from a hectic week, whether it's work from home or work from work. It's also a day to develop perspective on things by not just consuming news, but also analyzing it by listening to different points of views and figuring out what you feel about it. We hope we've been able to do just that with today's HD Brunch podcast. Feel free to give us feedback and suggestions on HD Smartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or DM us directly at HD Brunch on Instagram and Twitter. To listen to more podcasts, log on to hdsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. I will see you back here next weekend with another dose of entertainment that keeps things real. Till then, happy brunching, guys.
This was a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast. HD Smartcast.